Welcome to Gimcrack Videos. How can I help you?
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, we're just browsing for something a little different.
Well, have you tried our Forgotten Classics section?
Is that the one that's over there under the sign that says Blighted by God?
Oh, found something. Have you seen this before?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Perfect.
Wonderful. Enjoy your selection.
You know we're still here, right?
Oh.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on another episode of Found on Shelf, the podcast where we tell you everything you never wanted to know about movies you wish you had never seen. My name is Dustin, and joining me on the show is the sensei of schlock, Patrick.
I am reluctant to be here this evening, but I am happy to lend my expertise in the exploitation and schlock arts.
Absolutely. And a little while back, you'd picked out that amazing movie, New York Ninja. So
yes.
I wanted to return the favor and show off an equally funny and awesome ninja movie. How'd I do?
Well, I give you an A for effort. I will say this. I had never heard about this movie before, so that is a win.
Right?
I didn't necessarily need to ever hear about this movie, but that is also the podcast, so here we are.
Yes, we're talking about the 1993 film Little Ninjas, but it's also known as Three Little Ninjas or Three Little Ninjas and the Lost Treasure, and it's currently sitting at a 2.3 rating on IMDb.
So they just really went for it, didn't they? Because this movie is a ripoff of Three Ninjas, so they're just like, oh, we're just going to do three and then add a little in between. So it's Three Little Ninjas.
Yeah. It seemed like the title just kept switching around. And I'm pretty sure that this was just an excuse for the guy to take a trip to Southeast Asia.
Yeah. I'm thinking Indonesia. I don't know if I'm right or if there's any proof on that, but it feels very much like a scene out of Queen of Black Magic or Satan's Slaves.
Yeah, it was, I tried to look that up, but I could not find, I had such a hard time. I don't even know how or why I have this movie. It's here. I just have it. So I had to share it.
Unfortunately, I know exactly how that feels.
We're living the ring. I just have to pass it off to others to help free myself.
It's the virus that I have. Yeah. I have seen this thing. I know it exists. So now you have to, too. I get that.
Yes. Yes. And I think you could actually find it on, I think it was on Amazon as well.
It's on Prime. Prime is a trash fire. Prime is the burning tire fire in Springfield when it comes to like content. It's amazing. I worship at the altar of Prime.
Yeah. And this movie is so, off the grid of everything. I actually could not even find a real trailer for it. I couldn't even find a fake trailer. I mean, I would look up a trailer and it would be a trailer for like the other three ninja movies. And I'm like, that's not this one.
Did you pick one of the other trailers for the three ninja movies?
No, I thought about it, but that would just be false advertising. So why don't you give us your little elevator pitch and tell us what you think the movie or how you would, promote this fine film.
You know, this would be easier if I actually wrote them ahead of time, wouldn't it?
It's up to you, really. Off the cuff is always fun.
All right. So you have a kid, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure that they have made you watch things that they really, really enjoyed, and you had to pretend to like it because you didn't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
So what if you didn't do that? What if you just looked at them dead in the eye at the end of the movie and said, this is the stupidest thing that you have ever shown me, and and I need to impart this knowledge to you now, because if I don't, you will grow up thinking that this kind of content is okay, and God knows what you could unleash in the world if you think that this kind of mediocrity is acceptable. And no one told the director of this movie that, and I feel a little bad.
That's your
Oh, right. I'm trying to sell it. Right. I'm so sorry. I forgot. And this is supposed to be a show where we're positive, and I need to dial it back a little. It was just a very visceral gut reaction. Okay, I'm going to take my hoodie off. I'm going to roll my sleeves up.
You don't need to dial back a thing.
All right. You ready? Do you like ninja movies?
Sure.
Fantastic. I have a movie for you that has people dressed like ninjas in it. Does that scratch your itch? Do you ever wish when you're watching a martial arts movie that there were more old-timey prospectors in it? Little Ninjas. Little Ninjas is the only ninja movie that gives you everything you want. Questionable racism. Kids acting poorly. Bad ninja outfits. Terrible parenting. And a prospector named Cookie. Little Ninjas. Watch it today. Or, final pitch. This is 1994, right? All right. You are in the video store. Your child who loves martial arts and the Three Ninjas movies wants to see a Three Ninjas movie, but all four Three Ninja movies are checked out, and Little Ninjas is on the shelf. And you know if you don't go home with a ninja movie, it will be the end of you. Well, there is a solution. Little Ninjas is here, and it will give your child ninjas, and your child is a child, so they will not know that it is bad. That is the purpose that Little Ninja serves. That is actually what it was designed to do. There was a void in the universe, and the director and writing team of Little Ninja said, we can fill that void.
And you know what? I almost went to go watch this with my kid, but I saw a review on IMDb that's sounded like it was sarcastic, and it said something about how they would highly recommend it to parents that are concerned about excessive violence and sexual content. I thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie with my children, and it had 19 thumbs up and 111 thumbs down. So I just assumed that it was being sarcastic, and knowing how, you know, late 80s, early 90s movies can be sometimes, I was like, okay, I think they're saying it's overtly sexual. And no, it was just 111 people said, no, your opinion's wrong. You suck. This movie sucks. So, after I watched it through, I was like, I'm not putting my daughter through this movie. This is just not, that'd be bad parenting.
Yeah. It's excellent parenting that you vet the content your child is going to watch for stupidity.
Yes.
Because if we
violent
don't.
Violent sexuality. No. Okay. This is too dumb. She can't watch it.
It's America. Violence is a given. You just, no one can get naked. Other than that, you're fine.
Right.
I watched RoboCop when I was 4.
Oh God. I think we're starting to figure some things out here. All right. Well, so we like I said, I don't have a trailer to play for this movie. So we'll just go ahead and start us off here with a nice action scene here, right?
So the film starts with an action sequence. Everyone is using visibly fake machetes. They are in the jungles of a South Asian country.
Yeah, and they never said where. I looked in the credits. I tried to look it up, but it just said Southeast Asian, I think, is what we're thinking Indonesia.
Yeah, and now it's a made-up country in terms of, like, obviously the setting is real, but, like, the place it is supposed to be is fictional. What was it called?
Rotonga.
We're going to say this, and somebody's going to tweet at us that Rotonga is real, and we'll be fucked. But listen.
I wish we were that popular.
I don't know. This is like 6 months out. We could get there. Have faith, Dustin. But what you shouldn't have faith in is my geography skills, because they are next to none. We started a podcast about exploitation movies, and that is like the area of expertise I have. So clearly nothing on a geopolitical scale. If Rotonga is real, I do apologize. But I talked about Frankenhooker for 2 hours last week, so clearly I'm not the scholar you should be listening to.
As far as I can tell, it is not a real place.
Okay.
I tried to look it up and I found nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, if it was real, we would know about their national treasure. So, and that is what this action sequence is supposed to be about. It is people fighting. It is poorly defined people fighting. Like, you don't really know what side is what, but clearly there are machetes getting wielded. And a lot of people die in this fake for kids movie, which is weird. Because, like, you know, it's the 80s and 90s. Kids movies are allowed to be scary, violent, and have people die in them. I don't really think they are anymore, but to this extent to where they're just like straight up starting with like what is clearly a massacre of some kind. There's no blood or violence on the screen, but like they are clearly killing people.
Right. There's swords going into armpits and all kinds of stuff.
They're fighting. And then this is intercut with our three heroes and their mom on a cart being rolled through the jungle. Well, I don't know.
One of their moms.
One of their moms. It did feel like a Dave Seville and Alvin and the Chipmunks type thing, though.
Yeah, they never even talked about the other kid's parents, like, at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just the one young mom out there with her kid.
Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know why they're in the country, but what they do know is that instead of flying on a plane for 8 hours, they decided to take, or the children talked the mom into taking a cart ride to go see a festival at, what was the Temple of Pinshot?
Mom, I told you we were going to the Temple of Pinshot. Yeah.
I do actually.
Yes, the Temple of Pinshot.
I want to take time off of shit talking this movie and talk about how amazing that line read is. It's like that full 90s, like, Mom.
I told you we were going to the Temple of Pinshot. Yeah.
Yeah. God, I love that line read so much. I was not able to find Pinshot, especially the way they spelled it, as being referenced in any spiritual tradition. So I am an ignorant American, so I do not know if there is it. But How dare you? Yeah, I kind of feel like also this is just made up out of thin air.
Yes.
If I am wrong, I would love to know, but I couldn't find it.
It's as real as the swords.
The swords. They're so obviously plastic. Okay. So, is the main bad guy in brown face?
Depends on the scene.
Okay. Because at a certain point, they don't do the makeup, but it's clearly the same. Do you know that I was fully an adult before? Because I had only seen Short Circuit as a kid. I'm like, this movie's cool. And I was like in my 20s before I watched it again. And I said, holy shit. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's bad. This take on a bad guy is bad. So anyway,
Ciroc.
Yeah. So Ciroc is the bad guy, and he is throwing people off of a waterfall. Now he is throwing them off a waterfall after defeating their army. He's like standing on the edge of a waterfall and going through them one by one, and he's like, "You will tell me the secret of where your national treasure is, where it is hidden. Where is this national treasure hidden?" And Nicolas Cage is all ears at this point, but it's not going to help him any because no one's talking, right? And Ciroc is just like, okay, well, then I'm going to kill you. And then they throw them off the waterfall. And then we see all the people cheer on the side of the waterfall. And they do this over and over again, intercut with the scenes for the kids in the cart. And every time they go back to the scene with the waterfall, it's the same scene. Like when they show that, not necessarily when they're showing people like pushed off, but when after the person gets pushed off and everyone's rattling their sabers in triumph, it's the same shot. They're just reusing it. Why would you notice this? Because you're six and you're watching this because your mom rented the wrong movie. That's the only reason you're watching Little Ninjas, right? And it's because you sent your parents to the store to go get Three Ninjas. They didn't have Three Ninjas, or they were confused and they grabbed Little Ninjas and they brought it back. But they also brought back Little Caesar's square pizza, and you're like, fuck yeah.
And Crazy That's- Bread, I'm in.
Exactly.
This is like Asylum before Asylum.
Very much so.
But also what I found kind of funny the first time as all the sword fight was going on, you kept cutting back and forth to the mom and the kids and then to the sword fight and the mom and the kids. But every time they cut to the mom and the kids, she would say something like, "Oh, what I wouldn't do for a dip in the water." And then it cuts to the bad guys fighting and some guys getting tossed off the waterfall into the water. And then she says something else like, "Oh, it's such a safe place." And then there's the next scene. It's like guys stabbing each other.
There are attempts at jokes.
Yeah.
They don't really land all that well. The most obvious one is at some point they cut to California, and it's a wide cityscape, and it says Los Angeles, and then underneath in subtitles and like parentheticals, like a minute later it pops up on a clear day. Just get a smog joke, and I'm like, yeah, well, this one is the most visible joke they've done, and it doesn't work. It's yeah. like, oh, like my note in there actually says, well, they attempted a joke, but they actually do attempt jokes throughout and none of them land.
But the people, the same thing like three times throughout the movie, this little like somebody saying something oblivious and then it happening to an extreme level on, you know, another scene, and it just flips back and forth. And it's like, yeah. It didn't work the first time all that well. It's definitely not working the second time.
Look, they've got one joke. That was all they had the budget for. So they've got to keep using it, like the Lloyd Kaufman explosion scene.
Yes.
What happens is eventually one of them is like, okay, well, there's a map in town. And at this time, our party, the three little ninjas and their mom, not mom, get off the cart in a local village that has having a festival with a parade and a crowded marketplace. And the mom is like, go play. I'm going to shop. And I'm like,
as any responsible mom would do, right?
I wouldn't want to let kids out of my sight in an area where I knew. I definitely wouldn't want to let them run around a foreign country during what is a very busy festival time with no way of tracking them because no one has any cell phones because it's the 90s and Little Ninjas is a movie that gets to get made.
Yeah, so, I don't think that's a very good parenting.
And the best thing about that is actually this is the most consistently written part in the movie because there is no good parenting or child supervision throughout the film at any point.
Yeah, they're kind of on their own.
The parents of the Rugrats are more on top of things. I have misplaced a child who stores a screwdriver in their diaper without my knowledge in order to pick a lock. Have you ever thought about Rugrats?
I have not put that much thought into it.
I haven't either, but I just said all that and I'm like, you know, honestly, it's kind of insane. So the thing is, at this sequence, the kids wander off and shop. She wanders off to a different storefront and she encounters a person who I am calling British Ernest. And that is because they are a British person who talks like a stereotypically, I don't know, from accents. So it's a very like prissy stereotype.
Yeah, and it sounds like an American doing an English accent.
Exactly. It doesn't sound genuine. The reason I am calling him British Ernest is he is wearing Ernest P. Worrell's outfit of a t-shirt and blue vest. He does not have Ernest P. Worrell's swagger because... No,
he scratches himself with a chicken foot.
He does do that. And then they're like showing all these crazy things foreigners eat. And you're like, okay. But the kids are wandering around. Sirach and his entire army come and start attacking the village. Do they have guns?
So there's gunfire.
There's gunfire. In my mind, it starts with gunfire, but I don't actually remember seeing guns. It feels like very much like a Batman cop-out where they're in the Batman movies. They're always like, I don't use guns, but I have this sniper rifle that shoots something like a gun. Comic book Batman would hate movie Batman.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that scene. It was like the mom was talking to the British Ernest.
And there was gunfire, and she's like, what the fuck's going on? And he's like, oh, don't worry, it's just the rebels. They come down from the mountain and shoot people every now and then. She's like, what? And he's like, ah, it's fine. Which is very, like, almost colonialist attitude anyway, so.
Yeah.
Colonialist isn't a word.
But you never actually see anybody firing a gun.
No, I don't think you do. They're out for blood trying to find the map. They found out that the map is on the priest person. There's a high priest who has the map that holds the secret national treasure that we do not know what it is. He gets shot or stabbed and is dying and crashes into the storefront where the little ninjas are. And with his dying breath, he gives the map for safekeeping to three foreign children and to protect their national treasure. And this is my note for the scene. Are you ready? What I wrote down in the sequence, I said, well, you know, you can always trust white people. But anyway, what follows is just like a Looney Tunes chase throughout the marketplace. And they manage to like escape the bad guys and meet up with their mom. And then they are implied to fly out and it cuts to Los Angeles on a clear day. Here's what I need to say about this, because this is 25 minutes into the movie, 21 to 25 minutes into the movie. It's the entire first act. That's what it is. And the whole thing, the first act, basically functions as a 21-minute prologue to the story. Which is just bad filmmaking. Why did you devote an entire act to what should have taken 5 minutes? It's the prologue, but no, it's a full third of the film.
Mom, I told you we were going to the Temple of Pinchot. Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have that line without it.
You could fit that into the 5 minutes, man.
You know, it would have made a lot more sense if it was just, you know, people having a festival in Los Angeles, which has a lot of different festivals for different things, and an assault happened there. There's just no reason for any. I think, like I said, I'm pretty sure he just wanted to travel, and this was an excuse.
Yeah, it might have been Malaysia, by the way, because the bad guys hold up at Malay Imports for the rest of the film.
Good point.
But I'm not well traveled, so I do not know. What I do know is that the next sequence takes place at a karate tournament.
Championship tournament.
Sweet. Yeah, and so a whole bunch of kids are fighting, and the three little ninjas are fighting, and
it goes on for far, far, far too
far long. Too long. Two bad guys who function as. Did you see the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Yes.
They function as Bulk and Skull to the point where they even have bumbling music the entire time they're on screen.
Yeah, yep. I would agree, I would agree with that.
So Bulk and Skull walk in. That's unfair to Bulk and Skull. They're pretty good comedians for what they do. They walk in and they see the kids and like, these are the kids. So they walk over to the receptionist and she's like, they get the information on the dojo and everything. And then they say, and she just gives all this information to them. And then, are you interested in martial arts? Like, yeah, but not right now. Also, do you know where the children's dressing room is? And she gives that information too. And folks, this is 1994. I understand that, like, we weren't having discussions about proper child safety yet. But even in that context, it seems like maybe a bad idea to give the strangers directions to a children's dressing room.
Yeah, that I don't think that was a good choice. Then she's like, people come in asking for it all the time or something weird like that.
Yeah, that's more alarming. And then the kids go into the dressing room, by the way, and they see Bulk and Skull raiding their lockers for the map. And the kids, like, gang up on the guys and they're going to like beat him up more or less. It's just like cartoon characters clinging on to like a giant, right? Yes. That's the way they framed it. Meanwhile, we see their sensei, their karate instructor. I don't remember his name.
His name is Ken.
Ken. That's great. I don't remember any of the ninja's name, but we'll talk about Ken. Yes. Ken talks to the secretary. She's like, what do they want? She's like, I don't know. They just wanted to know where the kid's dressing room is. He's like, oh, okay. And the mom comes up and then they start talking and she is like hitting on him hard. he's like, are you happy with the way things are going for the kids and the instruction? She's like, oh yes, very happy. So he goes, you're not here for a refund? And she's like, and she's looking at him like, no, but how about a sparring match? Like, that would have been better dialogue. I wrote that as, but how about a sparring match? And then a minute later, she's like, do you want to come over tonight? I'm like, fuck yeah. I was right on the vibe that they should have said something funny. They're attempting jokes. Why not? But I digress.
So Patrick, really quick, do you want to guess who wrote this movie?
Milton Berle?
The sensei that has the mom drooling all over him.
I figured he was a driving force because he has the same kind of like presence as YK Kim in Miami Connection, only Miami Connection is a masterpiece.
Yeah, he wrote and produced this movie, and his dad was the executive producer on this movie, so it was another family affair here.
Knew it. Fucking knew he was involved. All right.
And they also did another movie together called The Force of the Ninja, where he played a character named Kenji. Mm-hmm. Who was a ninja going up against the Yakuza in the Arizona desert. So
what you're saying is you have a second pick for us at some point.
I am going to try because there's a lot of crossover in this movie in Force of the Ninja.
Then he trails off, realizes something's wrong with the kids, goes in to the locker room, sees the guys there. He kicks their ass and has them leave. And then get this, he doesn't call the cops.
Nah, you know.
Again, consistent writing and bad supervision choices.
Two goons tearing up a boy's locker room and then trying to beat up the boys when they come into the locker room. Hey, you don't call the cops.
And the movie then progresses the way you think it was. They go back to Serac, who is, by the way, hanging out at Malay Imports. Serac berates them in, again, feels very racist. In a way in which, like, archetypes are racist, right? Because, like, he's like, your children, you're sired by a goat and a monkey. And it's like, it feels like something they would say in, like, if they had tried to make Aladdin in the 60s. Well, okay, The Thief of Baghdad is Aladdin before Aladdin, but that would, it's not the point.
Oh, I think you mean...
What have I done to deserve this? To be shackled with two imbeciles, sired by a carabao and a goat!
Just bad writing.
What I love best about that line is how, like, he does three different accents in one little line.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they were going for, but they did not get it.
That's definitely true. But you could say that about the rest of this movie with one exception. Mm. And that's Cookie. we're going to get to him, believe me.
We'll get to Cookie.
All right. So the next, like, he berates them and they're like, well, we can get them back. We're just going to go to the dojo. And then we get back to the kids at the dojo.
Right. Also, I love how they were able to, from the island of Ratanga, manage to find these three kids in Los Angeles.
Sure. It's not like Los Angeles is big or anything.
Yeah, in such an unpopulated area.
Mm-hmm. So we're in the school, giving a brief rundown of what the rest of this movie is going to be, and that is there is going to be a getaway into the woods in which they have, like, ninja training. They have a martial arts getaway into the woods, and he's going to give them all ninja costumes to wear. He frames this as,
hey, these are ninja uniforms.
That's right, John. They're ninja uniforms. They're comfortable, but best of all, because they're black, you can get them as dirty as you want.
Yeah!
And also, I can charge your parents for an entire other uniform. So this happens to give you the idea of what the plot is. They go back, they're in the parking lot now, and the goons rush them again, and Ken has to beat up the goons and save the kids again. He's like, this is the second time this has happened. What's going on? We need to talk to your mom. But this is the second time this has happened, and we still have not called the cops. There are scanner cops in LA right now who can solve this whole problem, and no one's calling the cops, no one's calling the scanner cops, no one's calling the leper cops. They're just...
And I like how he's kind of victim blaming them too. Like, you owe me an explanation. It's like, well, why don't you just ask them what's going on?
Alright, you guys. This is the second time this has happened. I think you owe me an explanation.
Like, yeah?
How about, what's going on, kids? Everything all right?
He meets up with the one mom and no other parents, which is why I'm like, are these kids just all adopted? What is the relationship here, right? But they eventually tell them, okay, this happened in Ratanga. We've got this map. We get a flashback to Ratanga, though, to a sequence we only saw about 10 minutes ago, except now there's more stuff added to it, and it's all Looney Tunes cartoons in which they throw pies at people's faces.
Yes, and, like, smash pots on people's heads, and, like, two people go to attack and the guy in the middle ducks down and the two guys hit each other. It was just like, I think this was like the big problem with the movie is that I shouldn't say the big problem.
But there's the tone.
It was like, these guys were so ruthless and violent and yet just complete shit at attacking these, like, three kids.
Yep.
I'm like, you either got to have them be, you know, goofy in the beginning and then goofy with the kids, but you can't have them be badass over here and goofy over here. It just doesn't work.
Right. The only way you could get away with anything close to that is if you were like, well, is if you implied that the kids were like, Like if you addressed it narratively, right? Like, how can't I beat these kids?
Right.
But again, you can't go full on Looney Tunes after actually having a massacre in the first 5 minutes. What you needed to do was just have them beat people up a little and not throw them off waterfalls and hack them to death with extremely fake machetes. Seems like a little bit of a tone problem.
But I mean, that's how kind of a lot of movies were now. Mm-hmm. A lot of these late 80s kids movies, early 90s, you know, they were oddly violent.
Yeah,
but this is not a cartoon.
But I don't have a kid, so I shouldn't have a stake in this. But I just want to say, I think kids media should be scary again. Just like scare the fuck out of the little bastards, right? Because like, just scare the hell out of them. Because it was those are the movies I remember as an adult. I remember like the beginning of The Secret of Nim, and I remember the Nothing and the monster in The Neverending Story, or just the weird topless Sphinx lasering people to death.
Yes,
which that movie is fantastic all the way through. And I think that we need a little bit more of that, because I think it made better movies. But again, I don't have a horse in that race, so I shouldn't say what I'm saying. just putting it out there.
Yeah, no, it's kind of funny. They have started coming out with more kind of horror titles for kids, but like not too scary, but still kind of like tiptoes in that. So that's it's been interesting. And I think Disney just announced they're doing another Goosebumps series.
That's cool. That is cool.
So yeah,
dude. Okay, when I was a child, Tales from the Crypt had a Saturday morning cartoon show.
Oh God, I remember that.
There is a reason I am like this.
I used to love the Toxic Avenger cartoon.
Yes.
I had all those toys and everything.
There's a reason you're like this. It was the dude cartoon with the big shows. Nose.
Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, back to this.
So I think I took us off the rails. Is there something you want to say about the actual movie before I just charge ahead like a bull here?
Well, let's see. No, I think we've got it. We're finally at the point of the movie where Ken, the sensei, actually wants to do something.
Yes.
And goes to talk to the State Department.
And the State Department guy's like, well, you know, I've been told not to interfere. This is a matter of national security. They have diplomatic immunity. You're on your own. And he's like, well, I've got the map, which in any real world, that would have been that would have changed the conversation, because that's just political leverage. But again, that's putting way too much thought into what this movie is.
Now, did you look at the map?
I did. It is a child's drawing.
That was my exact notes. I was like, this is a kid's drawing.
It's like finger painted.
Not even show a treasure.
It's like finger painted rivers on like a green pasture. And I say that because it is blue on green splotches. It's not even really rivers on pastures, but that's what it is.
And it's like still a quarter of the map missing.
Yeah, I did notice that too.
And it doesn't say anything about a treasure on it.
Mm-hmm.
What this map is worth dying for.
Yeah, no, especially if Serac has already had such a position that he has diplomatic immunity. Like, I feel like he has money. I feel like Malay Imports that is housing him is some sort of like shell company to launder things illegally. So like, what is his deal?
Yeah, I that's... There's too many things that are trying to make sense and just don't. Mm. Like the trip to the Grand Canyon.
Now they go on their wilderness retreat. The bus pulls up. They go get out in this really nice lodge looking place. And we meet a new character. And I need to move the mic away from me when I say this. Are you ready? Because this character walks on screen. And I just said, what the fuck is a prospector doing in this movie? And I just want to reiterate, what the fuck is a prospector doing in this movie? This is there's a straight up old timey prospector who is the caretaker of this nice lodge in the middle of nowhere. He has got like a beat up pink shirt. He's got full on overalls that are all torn and ratted and tattery. He's got the beard. He's got the hat, and he talks like this. And it's a fucking prospector. And the only thing that is more baffling than the prospector in this movie. Do you have a clip of him addressing the prospector before I say this out loud?
Oh, I'm Cookie, the camp cook and the chief bottle washer around here. Why, if you follow me, I'll show you where you can stow your gear.
His name is Cookie. The prospector's name is Cookie. Why is he Cookie?
I actually cooked the food. That's the only reason I can think of.
He sounds like the South Park impression of a prospector in that episode where they like, where like
the diehard parody where they take over the reenactment, the historical reenactment thing. For it's 1864.
What's that? I'm Cookie, the camp cook and the chief bottle washer around here. Why, if you follow me, I'll show you where you can stow.
Chief bottle washer around here.
I tried to even, and I can't. I can't even. I paused it like 4 times to get through this 2 minutes. I'm like, this is too much. Cookie is the line. You have broken me thoroughly, movie. Because I'm flabbergasted. It is both the worst and best thing in this movie. Because what the fuck? As a prospector named Cookie, doing in a Three Ninjas ripoff that makes no sense anyway. And I stopped taking notes after Cookie came on screen. Because what the fuck does it matter? What does life matter? Nothing matters. I have embraced nihilism, for I have seen the face of Cookie, and it is terrible.
It's like, when we watched Parasite, and you were talking about how there was a much better movie going on than the movie that we actually got, I want to see Cookie's movie. Just a whole movie about him running this camp.
Cookie's fortune.
With British Ernest. Oh my God. British Ernest and Cookie running a camp.
Okay, admittedly, that is a better movie than what we were watching. Oh my God. Okay, but like, they're there for all of 5 minutes before Ciroc and his cronies come barreling through.
Yeah, somehow they managed to follow behind them. And I mean, it's a good 8-hour drive from Los Angeles to the Grand Canyon. So apparently they just follow them for an 8-hour drive.
Mm-hmm. They attack everyone immediately. They hold the kids hostage.
Yeah, with like a knife to their throat.
Yeah, again, tone deaf. Extremely dark stuff. But these four kids, there are three little ninjas. They have picked up a fourth ninja at some point. I do not know when that happened. Did you clock the moment in which Takashi, the 4-year-old, joined their party?
This scene. I was just never saw him before, unless he was some random kid in the tournament scene or something.
Yeah, so did you just pick up an extra little ninja? Mm-hmm. And they're walking around with Cookie out in the back, so they miss getting taken hostage, and they come back, and they see that this hostage situation is going on, and they're going to go infiltrate the building and take out the hostage takers one by one. And here is the thing that happens. Cookie says, no, wait, you can go around back and crawl in the doggy door.
Right.
I want to stress, again, extremely consistent with the lack of adult supervision here. Because, like, or just adults making the wrong call. Because he doesn't say, we should get the authorities, I should be the one to do this, anything like that. He's like, no, kids, you can totally beat these heavily armed militants up. And all you have to do is sneak around back and go through the doggy door. There are other visual gags in this sequence. I'm blowing past those. Fuck those Looney Tune gags. Because there's another Looney Tune gag, and that is them trying to crawl through the doggy door. So 1, 2, 3 kids crawl through the doggy door. Okay, I need...
You're not gonna talk about the box or the guy pissing on the rock?
I'm not going to talk about the gox or the guy picking...
Cookie making coyote noises.
Takashi hides in a box, a guy pisses on the rocks, and Cookie makes coyote noises. We've done it. We've talked about it. I need to take a moment to talk about Three Ninjas again. So Three Ninjas is a film series in which these kids are trained every year in the art of martial arts by their grandpa, who's played by Victor Wong. Victor Wong, you would know him from Big Trouble in Little China. He's also in Prince of Darkness, and he's in all of the Three Ninjas movies. In fact, he's the only actor to appear in all, and I want you to brace yourself, 4 Three Ninjas movies.
All right.
Now, the Three Ninjas, early on in the first movie, they get quote-unquote ninja names as part of their training. Now, their ninja names given to them by their Asian grandpa, you would think would be names of some kind of variety that would sound vaguely viable as real names, right? Like, maybe Takashi. Right. I don't want to be reductive when I say that, but these are their ninja names. Rocky, Colt, and Tum Tum. Now, Rocky because of his strength, and Colt because of his speed and temper. It's like a horse, apparently. Oh, but
is Tum Tum fat?
Tum Tum's fat.
Oh, poor Tum Tum.
This is the point I'm getting to. There are exactly three kids here. One is kind of a hothead, and one is fat. And
and he's not really that big of a kid, but he fills that archetype. This is an archetype that 80s movies had and into the 90s too, and that is quote unquote fat kid. And the best movie to do this, by the way, is Monster Squad, because the character is credited and named Fat Kid. So they just they were like clowning on it. They were like, okay, we're just gonna name him Fat Kid. That's hilarious. But like, this poor kid is just relegated to this role. And because, like, in the other scene when they're running for their life, he stops to eat. And in this scene, he is the only child that cannot fit through the doggy door. His hips get stuck.
Yeah.
Now, what?
Hips don't lie.
Now, Shakira, what he does is he goes to what actually should have happened is one of them should have crawled through the doggy door and then opened the door for them all to walk through. But instead, they all crawled through the doggy door until this kid got stuck. And then he says, then two of the kids open the door. With him stuck inside of it, walk back outside of the open door, shut the door, and then push him through the doggy door again. This part is not played as the joke. The joke is that he can't fit in the door. But the fact that they opened the door and walked around is the funnier joke, and the movie is not aware of that.
Right. That was a perfect, like, Three Stooges moment, and they just ignored it. Mm-hmm. I was like, what are you guys doing?
The rest of the action is all Three Stooges. The big, like, ringer, the heavy boss, comes in. And they hit him on the head with a frying pan, knock him out. And then they antagonize people in the living room. And then they just, it's an all-out scramble through the woods. And I think you said 15 minutes? I'm going to pass the mic back to you.
Oh, God. Yeah, there was about 10 minutes that went past with one small line of dialogue in it. And the rest of it was just screaming and yelling and just nonsense. At one point there was a Benny Hill gag where they were all running and hiding behind trees, and it was like they were going indoors, you know, so there was, you know, one would go behind this tree and then one would go in this tree, and then they'd eventually all hit each other, and it was so poorly done. It just didn't work. It was, they're different, the sunlight was in different areas, pine cones were all spread out everywhere. I was like, this is just not working, guys.
Yeah. And then the gags are like they're jumping on people's heads, there people are falling in mud puddles, but then also a guy trips and falls and is about to fall into the Grand Canyon but clings to life, and all three of the kids go up and start stomping on his feet so that he loses his grip and falls to death. Which, again,
and this is right after they had a debate with each other about, oh, well, we're not supposed to use martial arts to hurt people. And then one guy goes, well, I think the sensei would be okay with it in this situation. And they're like, all right, let's go kick some butt. And then they just straight try to murder this guy by stomping on his fingers.
The tone in this movie.
Jesus, you went from we can't use martial arts to hurt somebody to trying to murder people.
It's real bad. They win the day that, like, Ken gets freed and Ken starts beating people up and the kids start beating people up and they knock out Ciroc.
I did want to mention one thing before that. During that whole chase fight scene, I loved the music, and it got stuck in my head forever, because what would happen is there would be some kind of an action scene, and then it would kind of slowly taper off to this slow trombone noise, and then all of a sudden it would pick up again. So I had to choose the thing because it got stuck in my head.
Okay.
Oh, this will go on forever, Patrick.
Please stop. Please stop.
Wait for the trombone.
Oh. This sounds like Sonic music.
Oh, it is.
God.
That'll be my new tangent music. If you're going off on a too long of a tangent, I'm just going to push that.
Okay, folks, I just want you to know, before the trombone sequence, just that relentless synthesizer, when we say 10 minutes with no dialogue, what is happening is that music is playing that loop for 10 minutes, and you start to go insane, because it is like a sonic level from hell inside your head, and apparently What I just found out is if you're listening to it on headphones and it's directly in your ears, it will burrow into your brain like an ice pick. It's the same sensation I get when I drink gin. It's like an ice pick straight to the brain.
I'm so glad I clipped that out.
I'm not. Frankly.
It was, and it repeated literally that same chunk of music over and over and over again for 10 minutes.
Okay. The movie, we're going to talk about the end of the movie, and I've got like two or three things to add, because it's like we've got to get out of this, man. The cipher is just driving me slowly insane. What basically happens is they beat up Serac, and then they have the Mac. Serac is and his goons are apparently deported for their actions, even though they have immunity, which doesn't make any sense. Also, because they saved the map, they've been invited back to Rotunga as honored guests, and the mom is like, I don't want to go again, but they go again. Now they're in the scene, and it tries to end on a joke, and that is the priest, who is now wearing glasses. I'm not sure if he was a different actor in another scene and they decided to disguise that by having him wear sunglasses or not. I've lost track of who was in the movie at this point, but they bring out they say, we're going to give you
national treasure.
Yeah. Like part of our treasure or something. And they bring out a yak in a hat and it freeze frames on the yak and rolls credits. And that's the movie.
Yep.
So
also, I love how these kids are invited to go back to Rotunga and still don't bring their parents.
Yeah. I'm telling you, there's more to that story. So here's the positives, because I've trashed this movie for like an hour and I feel a little bad about it because it was like someone trying, but he was also trying to rip off a movie. So also less bad. All of the kids in the movie actually do seem to know martial arts. That one kid with the bow staff could definitely kick my ass. So like there is some talent in terms of the actual martial arts being displayed on screen. And it's casual children's fare. It's a movie that is made to keep your kids pacified. And I think that it will do that job. And it's fine. It's mostly harmless, except for like the racism. I guess I can't say harmless because it's the, watch Three Ninjas instead. I haven't seen Three Ninjas in getting close to 30 years now. So it could be objectionable. I don't know.
And I think the weird thing about Serac is you were never quite sure who it was racist against because it just kept changing.
It did. He was poorly representing several cultures.
Yes.
So let's talk a little about why this movie exists from what I know. And that is, I don't know how or why, but I do know why it's Three Ninjas specifically. And that is, I've talked about, they are ripping off the movie Three Ninjas, right? But I kind of have a tangent about Three Ninjas. Have you heard of the name Shin Sang-ok?
No.
So Shin Sang-ok was, and that was like a directing name. I think his original name was Shin Tae-so. But Shin Sang-ok was a South Korean filmmaker. And he was fairly popular. And until he was kidnapped by North Korea to make movies. Because North Korea wanted to have films produced, probably propaganda-centric, but they wanted to have like legitimate movies produced in North Korea. So they kidnapped Shin Sang-ok to make those, and his wife, to make those movies for him.
Wow.
And eventually he is able to escape at a film festival in Venice. And then I think he basically makes it to the American embassy, and they hide him for a while and then bring him to the States. He made lots of movies in his career. The last one he made in North Korea is a film called Bulgasari. In the 60s in South Korea, there was a movie called Bulgasari, which is a kaiju film about this like stone bull coming to life to being a giant like bull golem, right?
Cool.
This movie is made in 1962, I think, and it was a huge flop at the time in South Korea. Nobody wanted to see the kaiju movie. They thought it was trash. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in the 1980s, a kidnapped Shin Sang-ok remakes this film into Bulgasari, and it's the same basic plot, right? Stone golem like is brought to life, and it's a metaphor for the Kims and their tyrannical reign, and you know how they came to power and how it's destroying people. And you can watch this. It's not exactly lost media. Bulgasari, the original film that it is remaking, is lost media. there aren't prints for you to find. But if you look around, you can, I'm not telling you where, but if you look for Pulgasari, you can find it. It's okay. But it's an interesting little tidbit, right? This famous South Korean film director ends up kidnapped for years making these movies. And the last one he makes is this kaiju film that is basically a hit piece on the people kidnapping him. And then he escapes. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, he comes to America, and in the 90s, he makes a couple movies. And one of them is the second Three Ninjas film. So the Three Ninja movies are, there's Three Ninjas, and then there's Three Ninjas Knuckle Up, the Three Ninjas, like, Magic...
Strike Back?
Something like that, and Three Ninjas Magic Mountain, I believe. Like, there's four Three Ninjas films. So Three Ninjas comes out in 93, and then Knuckle Up comes out in 94, the same year as this movie comes out. Like, this movie comes out the year after Three Ninjas. When I say it is a ripoff, it is a strictly Asylum-level mockbuster, right? And Shin Se-gook directs Three Ninjas Knuckle Up as, I think, Simon Sheen is the pseudonym he uses. And then he executive produces all of the rest of the Three Ninjas movies, including the one with Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
And that's just, that doesn't connect to what we're talking about at all, aside from the fact that this is the mainline movies that are getting ripped off here. But it is an interesting piece of, like, film history that I just want to throw out there, because I know it, so now you have to, too.
That's some of my favorite things. Just like, all right, because you never know when that could just come up in a conversation, which very well could, because I will be talking about Little Ninjas. So, talking about the actual Little Ninjas, like you mentioned, they were pretty good at martial arts. I believe, I couldn't find any proof of this, but I believe that that Sensei Ken there, I believe they were actually his students at his actual.
It felt like that, because again, this has got giving me strong YK Kim energy from Miami Connection, which is how that happened. Although, you know, that is Taekwondo, and that's extremely important that we know it's Taekwondo.
All right. So yeah, the kids didn't really go on to do anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't. I don't think they were meant to. They wanted to be actors necessarily. One of them did a couple of shorts. One of them had a couple acting jobs on some TV shows and some commercials, but that was really about it. This, as you can tell, this didn't really lead to a lot of mainstream careers.
I would think not. No.
Much
like our pick last week, there were no careers after this film.
So yeah, let's see what we got. His mom left America when she was 27 and became a jazz singer in Japan.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, another thing that's kind of cool about Doug, who played Ken, the writer, he's the writer and guy. He was actually trained by Sensei Fumio Demura, who was Pat Moriarty's stunt double in Karate Kid.
Oh, that's cool to know.
Yeah, and he helped train Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris on different, like, acting fighting techniques. Yeah, so he had a bit of stuff for him there. I did have to look up the director a little bit more to see kind of what he was doing, because I could not find anything else really about this movie. So the director was a guy named Emmett Alston,
mm-hmm.
who also directed such fine films of a movie called Three Way Weekend. You ever heard of Three Way Weekend?
I mean, it's fair that you would assume that I had, but I actually have not.
So, me neither. So I looked it up. It's a 1979 film about two bisexual girls that go camping and are followed by a pervert in a gorilla mask. That was its description. That wasn't my summary. That was how it was described on paper.
Did Russ Meyer make it? What the
He also directed Demon Warp, which I do have.
You have Demon Warp. I've heard of Demon Warp. Isn't there like a Sasquatch and sex and also aliens?
Yes.
Okay.
It's another movie about people going camping and think they discovered Bigfoot, but it's a nest of aliens.
Okay, I'm excited for that one.
So apparently, he directed the Little Ninjas, The Force of the Ninja, and then Demon Warp and Three Way Weekend. He's quite an interesting guy all over the place.
You know, whatever's paying.
Right.
No, you know, that wasn't really, that is actually, it's not steady enough work to say that. I think he's an artist, and I think he's making purposeful decisions.
Yeah, I don't know how he got roped into the ninja movies after. Sure, there was some success with the Demon Warp.
Yeah. infamy? Is infamy success?
I guess. We're talking about them. And I have one more special thing for you. Mm-hmm. It's a Murder, She Wrote connection. So I had to search this one out, kind of go deep diving in it, because we did not have a Murder, She Wrote connection last time. So I wanted to try to find something. And there was a film editor on this movie named Mark Camps. Ah. He was an assistant sound editor on Murder, She Wrote.
There you go.
This was his one and only film editing job that he has on his credit.
Well, damn. There might be a Murder, She Wrote connection in Frankenhooker. I didn't look at the crew.
Yeah, I did go back and look at the Frankenhooker crew, and I didn't see any there either.
All right.
So that's about all. This was just, it was just a movie. I don't really know what to say about Little Ninjas. I don't, it was just there. I don't think I'd watch it with my kid, but yeah.
Two melting faces out of five.
Two melting faces out of five. It's going to be really hard for you to get a one.
Land of Doom is one.
I'll try. Oh, Land of Doom was a one. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
In a way, I brought you here to offer you a job. You think you can do it better, so here's your chance.
What do you think, Patrick? You're allowed to change three things and only three things to improve this movie. There's three ninjas, and you have three options to change things. What do you do?
I'm going
to
make the prologue 5 minutes. We're going to get through that action quick. That's the first thing we're doing. The second thing we're doing is we're scaling down the violence to be all goofy, no fake murders. Just like, yeah. Okay. The two of those things alone have made the movie more efficient and made it more child appropriate.
See, that's kind of why things worked like that in Home Alone. The thieves and the criminals, they were bumbling idiots to begin with. And this is just, and it was okay that they were getting foiled by a kid. They weren't like murdering people in one scene and then like slipping on banana peels the next.
I'm going to go ahead and cast Serac as an Asian actor so that we can get rid of we'll try to get rid of the racist element as much as possible, right? Like the thing I want to change is no racist element. The way that I would do that, I would be more than one change, but casting Serac is a step in the right direction. The fourth thing I would do is rent Three Ninjas instead of Little Ninjas. And if I had five things, it would be to make a spinoff with Cookie the Prospector.
Yes, I would absolutely watch Cookie.
Cookie's Gold, Cookie's Curse, Cookie's Kingdom. I don't know. Fuck it. Flesh for Cookie. Andy Warhol's Flesh for Cookie.
I did expect you to go a little hard on this movie based on the messages that you sent me while watching it. I think you called this movie an abortion.
I did.
All right. Well, I guess that about wraps it up for this episode of Found on Shelf. We talked a lot more about Little Ninjas than I thought we would. I hope all you listeners out there enjoyed this podcast more than you enjoyed that movie if you watched it. If you did enjoy this podcast, please like and subscribe leave a review on whatever kind of platform you managed to scrounge around and find us on here. Mm-hmm. And you could also check us out on our website, foundonshelfpod.com. For all your social media needs, your twits and your Facebooks. You can just find us, Found on Shelf Pod, or you can hit us up at Gmail at the same one as well. Let us know what you think of the show, offer any suggestions on movies that you would like us to check out in the future.
I just want to say this is what's called a call to action, because, you know, engagement helps us do things like keep Cookie alive. Cookie is being held in our basement right now, and if you want him to see another sunrise, you have to give us likes, subscriptions, reviews, just anything. Toss Cookie a cookie and keep him alive.
How could you say no to Cookie?
It hurts so much. Stop. I didn't take the headphones off yet. Space. Amityville sucks ass. I'm excited that there's a movie that's going to rip it off but put it in space, because it's my belief that all horror movies should be in space. Hellraiser in space, hell yeah. Leprechaun in space, every time.
Jason,
it's not the worst Friday the 13th movie.